And everyone can do that by, you know, shifting to renewable energy, reducing the use of cars, use train more, cycle more, eat less meat, consume a bit more carefully.
That's Johan Rockström speaking during a 7-minute film clip from an Al Jazeera story about the Alaskan Willow Project. Rockström is the joint director of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. He's internationally known and recognized for his research on global sustainability issues. And this is the latest episode of Climate Conversations. Welcome. It's so great to have you on board. I'm your host, Robert McLean. This podcast is assembled here in Shepparton, in northern Victoria, Australia, on the lands of the Yorta Yorta people. Yes, the stolen lands of the Yorta Yorta people, and I pay my respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. I'll now play the audio from that 7-minute film clip, and you can watch the entire show and read the associated story in a link you'll find in the show notes.
Let's talk about climate change. People are calling it the crisis of our time, and it is.
Climate change.
Climate change.
Climate change.
Climate change.
But it's easy to get lost in this story. The science is dense and politics get in the way. World leaders are meeting in Madrid to talk about the climate crisis and how to slow it down. And they're under pressure from millions of people around the world calling for concrete action.
The empty promises are the same, and the inaction is the same.
So what exactly are we doing wrong, and how do we fix it? We're going to kick this off with some basic science, so bear with me, because this is important. Look at this graph. These are the levels of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere over hundreds of thousands of years. But this spike in carbon dioxide at the very end, that took off during the Industrial Revolution. We started breaking CO2 records in 1950, and we haven't stopped since. Why? Well, scientists say there's a 95% chance that human activity is the cause. We've been burning more and more fossil fuels like oil and coal, which release CO2, to power our homes, factories, airplanes, and cars. There's also a lot more of us. The global population has tripled in the past 70 years. And we're consuming more products from animals that release another pollutant called methane. So all those gases are released into the air, and when sunlight gets into the Earth's atmosphere, some of the heat gets trapped and the planet gets warmer. That's why they call it the greenhouse effect. But the concern is not that the Earth is getting warmer. It's that it's happening far too quickly.
But it's actually the warmest temperature on Earth since the last ice age, since 10,000 years ago.
The UN says that right now, our world is about 1 degree hotter than pre-industrial times. That's around the year 1800, which is okay. In fact, the UN says if we warm by 1.5 degrees before the end of the century, we should be fine. The UN even says 2 degrees would probably be all right. But again, the problem is speed, because right now we're on track to hit 1.5 degrees in only 10 years. And if we don't slow that warming down, it could mean catastrophe within my lifetime, and maybe yours too. And we're already getting a taste.
Climate change is here. Climate change is happening. We are well into the 6th mass extinction event.
Europe is currently colder than the Arctic.
More than 1,000 people being rescued just in the early morning hours of Sunday.
Millions of people are likely to suffer worsening food and water shortages.
The drought, which is now in its 10th year, is a phenomenon that's here to stay.
We've never seen a year's worth of rain in less than 7 days.
Sea levels are rising, about 3 millimeters a year, because seawater expands as temperatures get warmer. Melting ice sheets and glaciers also add trillions of tons of fresh water into our oceans. People around the world are already losing their homes. And if things carry on, millions more of us will have to pack up too. Entire coastal cities could be underwater within 80 years, like Miami in the US or Osaka in Japan. Entire island nations in the Pacific could completely disappear.
natural disasters becoming more and more intense, more frequent, with more devastating consequences. The dramatic impacts of drought in different parts of the world, all this is creating a situation that is a real threat to humankind, and we are not doing enough.
If 99% of doctors said to you, take this medicine or you will get really sick and probably die, you would take it. Who wouldn't take it? The problem is, at the moment, we don't have any medicine.
Now, there is a plan to slow all this down. Back in 2016, world leaders signed the so-called Paris Agreement. And the big pledge is to cap temperatures rising by 1.5 degrees, or a maximum of 2, before the year 2100. So countries set their own targets on how much CO2 they emit. But here's the thing. 3 years after the agreement, global CO2 levels are still going up.
CO2 emissions have been going up the last year by 2%, so that's actually above the average of the last 10 years. So it's started to increase again, and it doesn't look too good.
In some ways, we're going backwards.
The United States will cease all implementation of the non-binding Paris Accord and the draconian financial and economic burdens the agreement imposes on our country.
The US, one of the world's biggest polluters, has pulled out of the Paris deal. Russia and China are accused of not giving themselves ambitious targets in the first place. Turkey and Poland want to build more power plants that use coal. And then there's the skeptics.
It's a political decision that there is man-made global warming.
Forced the computer models to say, aha, human influence, CO2 and other stuff.
The ground-based temperature data has been massaged to show an increase, but the satellite data shows no increase.
On the other hand, there is positive momentum. There's more awareness, and some countries are making progress. India, Morocco, and the Gambia have massive renewable energy projects.
There are different countries doing things successfully. So some countries are, for example, you know, making all public transport free in the cities. What a great way to encourage people out of their cars.
But experts say what's needed now is an even bigger push to change everything about the way we run our world.
Business as usual has got to change. Politics as usual has got to change. In order to combat that, we have to change the system that has allowed it to happen. You can't have infinite growth on a finite planet.
And everyone can do that by, you know, shifting to renewable energy, reducing the use of cars, use train more, cycle more, eat less meat, consume a bit more carefully.
So where does that leave us? Well, there's only so much bike riding and light bulb replacing that you and I can do every day. But the truth is that it's those everyday things that are going to change anyway. Even coffee could run out if farmers can't grow it. So the expert advice is that it's down to all of us to change our ways and shake things up, or climate change is going to do it for us.
Now we go to an audio piece from Yale Climate Connections, and you'll find a link for that in the show notes.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Summers in the Phoenix metro area are sweltering.
By June, just about every day is going to be over 100 degrees.
That's Augustine Gastelum of RailCDC, a community development organization in Mesa, just east of Phoenix. Many locals beat the heat by moving from one air-conditioned space to another. But for folks who walk to work or wait for the bus, the heat is unavoidable, especially in historically underserved neighborhoods, which are often the hottest.
Very little tree cover, very little shade access. The bus stops don't have shade coverings.
In one predominantly Latino area, his group led a series of workshops. Residents shared their experiences of heat and identified solutions that would help them.
A lot of the things that came up in the conversations were really basic.
For example, building shade structures at bus stops, installing sprinklers where kids can cool off, and providing access to drinking water along busy walking routes. But while the solutions may seem simple, Gastelum says it's been a challenge to fund and implement them. So as the climate warms and the city gets even hotter, there's a long way to go to protect those who are the most vulnerable. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
And now from The Guardian, we have a story by Jordan Beasley. Jordan's story has the headline, Climate Activist Violet Koko's 15-month jail sentence quashed on appeal. The story begins. A 15-month jail sentence imposed on a climate protester who blocked one lane on the Sydney Harbour Bridge with a truck has been quashed. Deanna Violet Koko, 32, was issued with a 12-month conditional release order on Wednesday after District Court Judge Mark Williams heard she had been initially imprisoned on false information provided by the New South Wales Police. Koko cried tears of joy in court, with her supporters cheering outside the Downing Centre. She told reporters she would pursue compensation against the police after spending 13 days in prison. Obviously, we need to continue our right to protest. Protest is such an important part of our democracy, she said. I plan to keep continuing to raise the alarm on the climate and ecological emergency to avert billions of deaths. And now from the New Daily, we have a story with a headline. Drivers face shocking fines for icing electric cars. The story by Jennifer Dudley Nicholson begins. Drivers could be fined as much as $3,200 for parking spaces for electric vehicles as part of let-alone penalties introduced in four states and territories. The fines, some of them added to road rules late last year, range from $3,200 in Australia and Capital Territory to $369 in Victoria. The experts say the heavy penalties are important to encourage electric vehicle adoption and prevent drivers doing the equivalent of parking in front of a fuel bowser. Next, we shift to a story from The Conversation, and it's by James Renwick, who is a professor, physical geography, in brackets, climate science, at Victoria University of Wellington. The story has the headline, Floods, Cyclones, Thunderstorms. Is climate change to blame for New Zealand's summer of extreme weather? The story begins. The final months of New Zealand's summer carried a massive sting, bringing unprecedented rainfalls several times over. From widespread flooding in Auckland at the end of January to ex-tropical cyclone Gabrielle, dumping record rains and causing devastating floods across the east coast of the North Island. After all that, New Zealand experienced spells of thunderstorms bringing repeat floods to parts of Auckland and then Gisborne. And now we have a reason to be cheerful, and that's where the story comes from, Reasons to be Cheerful. The story is headlined, Dead Electric Car Batteries Find a Second Life Powering Cities. The story is by Peter Jung. And the story begins. Last month, a small warehouse in the English city of Nottingham received the crucial final components for a project that leverages the power of used EV batteries to create a new kind of circular economy. Inside, city authorities have installed 40 two-way electric vehicle chargers that are connected to solar panels and a pioneering battery energy storage system, which will together power a number of on-site facilities and a fleet of 200 municipal vehicles while simultaneously helping decarbonise the UK's electrical grid. Let's shift now to the Washington Post, where we have a story that has the headline, Deadly Cyclone Freddy has become Earth's longest-lived tropical storm. The story begins. The storm was born in the Indian Ocean on February 6 and has been on the long winding journey since, walloping both Madagascar and Mozambique and causing at least 21 deaths. Now poised to hit Mozambique for the second time, the storm has set a world record for tropical storm longevity, enduring 31 days and counting. At this time, it does appear to be a new record holder for the longest lasting recorded tropical cyclone. But we are continuing to monitor the situation, said Randall Cervini, the World Meteorological Organization's Rapporteur for Weather and Climate Extremes, in a news release. Now we have a story from the Washington Post. The headline for that story is, Parts of California Face Flooding Emergency, a Storm Kills at Least Two. The story begins. At least two people died on Friday as heavy rain fell on a deep snowpack, causing life-threatening flooding in parts of California and prompting evacuation orders. The most powerful atmospheric river, a fire hose of deep tropical moisture from the central Pacific Ocean, has been pummeling largely the central part and already waterlogged and snow-laden state. The National Weather Service declared flash flooding emergencies, its most dire flooding alert. The Tulare County, southeast of Fresno, in the southern Century Valley, as heavy rain rapidly melted snowpack in the lower Sierra Nevada. Authorities urged residents to seek higher ground and issued emergency evacuations around midday Friday in low-lying parts of Kern Country. Now we shift to the Melbourne Age for a story by Ambrose Evans-Pritchard, and the headline for his story is Battery Breakthrough Could Put Fossil Fuels Out in the Cold. The Argonne National Laboratory in the US has essentially cracked the battery technology for electric vehicles, discovering a way to raise the future driving range of standard EVs to 1,000 miles or more. It promises to do so cheaply without exhausting the global supply of critical minerals. The joint project with the Illinois Institute of Technology, that's the IIIT, has achieved a radical jump in the energy density of battery cells. The typical lithium-ion battery used in the car industry today stores about 200 watt-hours per kilo. Their lab experiment has already reached 675 watt-hours per kilogram with the lithium air variant. Electric scooters are being discussed in Paris. From Euronews Green we hear, people in Paris are being asked to vote on whether electric scooters should be banned. The story by Rosie Frost begins. On April 2, Paris will decide whether the capital city's 15,000 for hire electric scooters will survive. The city hall has called for a referendum asking residents, do we or don't we continue with free-floating rental scooters? These for-hire scooters, which can be picked up using mobile app and left anywhere, have become a divisive issue. Some residents say they block pavement, are dangerous for pedestrians, and generally clog up the streets. And now from Market Forces we hear, Australia's five biggest super funds failing on key climate promises. The story begins. A new report by Market Forces finds Australia's five biggest super funds are greenwashing and exposing themselves to legal risk by failing to effectively engage with companies expanding fossil fuels. Managing more than $1 trillion of members' retirement savings, the five funds analysed in the report, Australian Super, Commonwealth Super Corporation, Australian Retirement Trust, Aware Super and AMP, have all committed publicly to manage climate risk. Four out of five funds have also set targets to achieve net zero emissions by 2050. The report, Stewards of Climate Disaster, reveals all five funds are claiming to engage with fossil fuel companies to drive climate action, but failing to demonstrate effective engagement strategies, including with Australia's two biggest oil and gas producers, Santos and Woodside. Now we shift to the news service of Al Jazeera, where we hear US lawsuit failed to stop Willow oil drilling project in Alaska. The story begins. Environmental groups filed a lawsuit seeking to halt a controversial oil drilling project in Alaska approved by the US government, which has pledged strong action to fight climate change. The six groups that filed the suit in the US District Court on Tuesday accused the Interior Department and other agencies of violating the National Environmental Policy Act, Endangered Species Act, and other laws by authorising the fossil fuel extraction. Next, we have a guest essay from the New York Times by Suzanne Roberts. The essay has the headline, Fire, They're Nice. Are the mountains around my Californian town going to collapse? The story begins. Since I had to leave home a few days ago, my husband has been sleeping on the living room couch under the strongest support beams in the house. Our roof has seen more than 40 feet of snow since November, and we're not confident it can handle yet another storm. Already, meltwater behind an ice dam on the roof is leaking into our bedroom. In the past week, as our town of South Lake Tahoe had absorbed rain from two more atmospheric rivers after 54 snow days this season, a gas station awning gave way and gas pumps caught on fire. A house exploded because a propane gas tank's pressure regulator vents were buried under snow. Apartment building collapsed, displacing its residents, and one family narrow escaped a falling ceiling. Their little dog was crushed. Now we have another story from the New York Times. It has the headline, Track the Latest Atmospheric River to Hit California. The story begins. The latest atmospheric river in a series that has brought widespread heavy rainfall to California hit the state Tuesday. Atmospheric rivers are essentially moisture streams in the sky, which can often be seen from space as narrow bands stretching from the west coast out across the Pacific. This kind of atmospheric river is known as the Pineapple Express because of its origins near Hawaii. And don't forget to check out the story from Yale Climate Connections. Simple solutions could reduce heat inequities in Phoenix. The city's scorching summers disproportionately harm low-income and undeserved communities. Links to all those stories mentioned in today's episode will be in the show notes. Yes, we've reached the end of this episode of Climate Conversations. Thanks so much for your company. It's been great to have you along. So until we talk again, please take care, stay safe, and please be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And please, if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with your friends. In fact, I would love you to share it with your friends, for we all need to know all we possibly can about the climate crisis, an existential threat. So until we talk again, please take care.